Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I wish to thank Robin and the organizer for the kind of invitation. It's always, for me, a big pleasure to come to Perimeter. And I really love Robin's enthusiasm in his very intriguing and alluring presentation. Really. And so, unfortunately, we are going to a little bit something more technical. But for those of you who are familiar with quantum estimation theory, this is going to be something easy and pretty in the canonical style of the Hellstrom theory, as you will see. I want first to just present my group in Pavia. This is why I am able to do so many things, because we are working, many of us, and they are all of them very nice and smart guys. And in particular, the work on quantum comps has been done fully in collaboration with Paolo Perinotti and Giulio Chiribella. And the work on the specific application to optimal quantum tomography, also in collaboration with Alessandro Bisio and Stefano Facchini and Daniele Magnani, who are three postdocs. Actually, no, sorry, PhD students. So this is the outline of the talk. After introducing the general new quantum estimation framework, so I will especially devote some time introducing this new notion of quantum comb and quantum tester, which is a specific case of quantum comb. Then we will review some application. I will spend particularly some time in the optimal process tomography. Unfortunately, this laser point, my laser pointer is out of battery. Yeah, this is the official PI. So we will spend some time here. This is the most technical part, but I don't know, we can even skip some transparencies if you want, but I know that most of you are interested in this application. So I prepare a set of tomography on this. And then I will also show you some new kind of application, like cloning of processes. And this is, I think, very interesting, quantum learning. And we will see that this quantum comb is the right way to formalize quantum strategies in any quantum protocol, and also quantum algorithms. So this is a very powerful notion, you will see, which is comparable to the notion itself of a quantum channel. So let's start from the canonical theory of Hellstrom that everybody, I'm sure everybody is familiar with. Is there somebody who doesn't know quantum estimation theory? Oh, yes. Yeah, for experimentalists, you must be a little bit more patient. But I'm saying, Alexander Levosky is one of the few patient experimentalists, patient with theoreticians. Usually, you know, they don't like formulas. Anyway, the problem in quantum estimation theory is that we have a state, a quantum state, which is parametrized by a parameter theta, which can be actually a set of parameters, is a vector parameter. And the problem is to estimate theta optimally according to some cost function. Here, theta hat denotes the estimated value. And the mathematical formulation of the problem is that you want to find the optimal P of EM. Everybody's familiar with the notion of P of EM, I hope. Yes. The optimal P of EM, which minimize the cost. So this is the general framework. And here you have just one quantum system, which is the system having this state and on which you measure the P of EM. Yes.
Defined, because if I have a P of M, the cost function tells me the cost of the estimate. I still need to know how to go
I can tell you in a minute what you by the P of M and by the Born formula, because we are going to give more details later. By the Born formula, namely the probability distribution as the trace of the P of M times the quantum state, you get the conditional probability of, given some real value of theta, you get the estimated one. So once you have the conditional probability, you average the cost function, and you get the average cost, and you want to minimize that cost, which depends. Sorry? Yeah, so what? No. You have the following. You have a generic POVM. You have a generic state. You calculate the average cost. And then you want to minimize it. The state is fixed, parameterized by theta. And in average, over all possible prior distribution of the probability of the parameters theta, over the parameter theta, you want to average, you want to minimize the total cost. That's all. Do you want to write me, want me to write on the blackboard? I should have made maybe more. Yeah.
Once I make the POVM, I have to decide what theta hat.
No, it's a variable. It's a variable. Then you integrate over all possible theta hat using the conditional probability of a given theta. What is the conditional probability of having a theta hat? I'm saying if you want, then we have to skip other transparencies. We can go more into details of quantum estimation theory. I asked before, it seems that most of the people has the basic notion of quantum estimation theory. But if you want, we can, I know that you know these things. So yeah, I know that you are provoking this question. Just so. Anyway, the lesson that we learned from entanglement is that actually, let me say this before. The physically interesting situation, it's always that actually is not that you have a state which is parameterized by theta, but the parametrization of theta comes from a parametrization of a unitary. For example, in the well-known case of a phase estimation, you have a phase shift of a known state. You want to estimate the phase. And actually, if you think about every quantum measurement, in every sense, can be always be regarded as an estimation of parameters of a transformation of a channel. This is the most general framework. Now, the problem comes that you also want to optimize the state, because it's not that you have this parametrization. You want to estimate theta, not the state. So you want to optimize the state. But then you immediately have a subtle problem that actually the optimal POVM for estimating a parameter depends on the state which is transformed. For example, in a phase estimation, the very well-known formula of optimal phase POVM by Peg and Barnett or Susskind Glover, I'm sure everybody knows. This is optimal only for a specific class of pure states that are pure states having a relative phase between coefficients, which is fixed. So now you want to optimize the state, but you cannot move outside this class. So this is not the right way to do the optimization. We want actually to optimize together both the state and the POVM in a joint way. So let me stress that the interesting situation is not to determine the parameter of a state, but the parameter of a channel, of a transformation. This is the general situation. So let's focus on this. And for simplicity, let's consider a unity transformation. So we want to estimate the parameter x, parameterizing a unitary transformation, u of x, optimally according to some cost function. So what is the lesson that we learn from entanglement? Is that the best thing to do is not the input-output approach that I showed you before, but is to prepare an ancilla entangled with your system, and then to make locally the unitary transformation on the system, and then to perform a joint POVM on system and ancilla. This is the most
general thing you can do. And actually, the optimization, you need to optimize over all possible ancillas, over all possible dimension, and over all possible states. And we know that in many cases, you really need an entangled state when you optimize. So the previous scheme actually is not good enough for estimation of parameters of unitaries, not estimation of parameter of states, which is the real stuff. So the problem is to find this state, to find this POVM for all possible ancillas, for all possible states, for all possible POVM, optimally according to some cost function. And by the way, the optimal phase estimation that is in the literature is right, but just because we were lucky. Okay. So we see there is a huge paradigm shift from an input-output situation with a single quantum system to a sandwich situation in which the unknown quantity is the ham, and what you want to optimize is the bread. This is the new scheme. Let me say that in addition to the problem of quantum estimation, we have a more general problem, which includes that of quantum estimation, which maybe this is not the right word. You have a better word, and please tell me. I want to call quantum feedback. The problem is the following. You want to perform a transformation, T of U, this overall transformation from here to here, which depends on an unknown unitary transformation occurring on a different system in general. So, for example, you want to yes.
I mean, you could prepare an initially entangled state, and then by you've got an isomorphic relationship to the resulting state.
Yeah.
And then it's just doing an estimation of parameters.
If you want, you can regard this scheme as a special case of the previous one. No, you're right. The sandwich scheme is a, in some sense, a special case of the input-output one, because you can take the unitary as a special case of unitary as a local unitary over. Yeah, but this is not the way which was regarded in the literature. Otherwise, yes, the original scheme is already general, if you regard in this way.
Considering different input states, or you consider a fixed, you know, a single input states, you're going to want to work that.
No. What, at the end of the story, the input state will disappear. There will be just one mathematical thing we optimize. Because we have this problem that when we optimize the state, we first optimize the POVM, then we optimize the state, but this is not right, because the POVM is optimal only for some states. So what you want to do, you want to erase state and POVM, have a unique mathematical structure, and you optimize only them. This is what you want to do. You want to do optimization for everything in one shot.
That means that's going to work for any generic input state?
Yes, it will be optimization of every possible state, every possible QDM, and more, every possible setup, every possible.
And so, sorry, but now I guess I'm asking you to tell your conclusions already. You're saying that it is actually optimal for each and every possible input state?
Yeah.
And not just that it's sort of optimal averaged over all input states?
No. You optimize, it depends. You can use a Bayesian scheme in which you have a prior of input states, or you can use a minimax scheme. Depends. You have an optimization framework, and then you can use your own preferred scheme. So this is a problem which I think is very important, and the specific problem of estimation is where, when here you have no input, and here you have a classical output, right? And this is the problem, for example, of reference frames. The problem of reference frame realignment has always been regarded as you estimate the frame, and then you estimate the misalignment of the frame, and then you realign it. But you can do it on the fly coherently in a much more efficient way. So in general, the situation is that you want some transformation depending on some other transformation, and you want to optimize this feedback.
And clearly, in quantum estimation, if you have many copies, you can repeat the estimation, and you get a precision factor, statistical precision improvement, square root of n. But you actually know you can do much better using a coherent strategies in which you perform a joint POVM jointly on all your black boxes. And you get, in this case, a precision factor n instead of square root of n. Yeah. N is the number.
Oh, of I know. I mean, what number is it?
N. Then could be no. You know, in the real problem is a variable. N is a variable.
No, but you have to do the experiment, so there's some number.
Yeah, but there are situations like, for example, if you consider the problem of an algorithm, you want to minimize the number of calls, for example. N actually must be a variable if you really want to be smart. For the experiment, it depends. Usually, it's one.
One?
It's one, just one.
Do you get precision with one?
Yeah.
We like it to be one.
No, in the experiment, what you do is one here, but here you repeat the experiment many times. It is 500,000, for example, half a million.
Okay, let's say it's 500.
Okay.
That's my second question.
Well,
yeah. What happened to noise?
Eh?
What happened to noise?
Oh. Everything is included here, everything, but you're an experimentalist, right?
No.
Why?
I'm an engineer.
Okay. Then you will appreciate. Like, Elmstrom was an engineer. He founded the quantum estimation theory as a radar theory. You know, at the beginning he started working with radars. No, actually, this is what we have in the experiment. This is very hard to do experimentally, extremely difficult. But in this case, you need to do that because it makes no sense to repeat the transformation to make it more precise.
Realization of this general POVM when you are considering a single POVM requires many-body interaction. So if you have n qubit type of a structure, you need to have many-body interaction, which is very generic. So that it's not scalable. So you have to do exponential number. If you want to even simulate that,
Agree. The problem is the following. You first need to know what is the best thing you can do in principle. Then you want to address the problem of complexity. That's the second step. In every engineering problem, you have first to know what is the best you can do in principle. Then you address the problem of complexity. This is a second level problem. I'm addressing the first level. What you can do, the best you can do in principle.
We don't yet know which of these joint coherent measurements could be done using a quantum algorithm on a quantum computer. Some may be the algorithms may not exist, but some of them, there may exist algorithms on a quantum computer to do this efficiently.
We have a theorem that says that we can realize everything.
You can.
We can realize everything. We have a theorem.
No.
But the problem is that it may be hard, experimentally hard.
I was just asking, you say you have a theory which say we can realize everything. So if I give you a generic POVM, who guarantees me that the POVM isn't exponentially called, you know?
This is the complexity issue.
Yeah, but if you say it's realizable, and you talk to an experimentalist and say, you have exponentially kind of big apparatus, he will say, forget it.
No.
I'd say even a big polynomial is really not so great.
But construction, and many of these generic POVM are not realizable. Because, you know, even a mutual unbiased basis measurement on many qubits, you need to have many body interaction.
Wait a minute.
General POVMs are definitely exponentially.
In finite dimension, every child and every POVM is reliable. In finite dimension.
Efficiently?
No, that's another issue. Wait a minute. But, you know, the problem is the following. I give you what is the best you can do. Then there is a huge set of equivalence class of circuits achieving the same POVM. There is not one circuit achieving the same POVM. There are infinitely many. Then you can address the problem. Which POVM is the easiest, the least complex in terms of some resources you have to define? Which resources are what? Quantum gates? Which gates?
Then you solve the complexity issue. Then you know what is the complexity. And then you choose the optimal QVM and the least complex. Or you can decide from the beginning. You don't want the optimal QVM. You want something which is suboptimal, but it's easier to do. Why not? But the method is general. Actually, you will see it's really general. And you can put constraints if you want to limit the complexity on the method. But what I can give you in an hour, actually, I will not be able to give. No, please, I don't want to discourage your question. In an hour, is that I will just give you the optimal, in principle, you can do. But not, I'm not addressing the complexity issue. This is extremely interesting. But it will take a couple of years to have an idea. But I will tell you, if you want, maybe in a separate session, there is a constructive way, which is very easy, I'm saying, because we can discuss this in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a constructive way of realizing every of these generalized POVM I'm going to present by, in a structured way, by isometries, then the isometry by unitary and block and so on. Then it depends, the complexity depends. If I give you a unitary which makes a huge stuff, the complexity is one. If I give you just a quantum gate, the complexity can be polynomial, but it's not exponential. Because exponential is the dimension of the Hilbert space, is not the number of qubits. So it is very unlikely that you may have situation in which is, but the fact that you say you guess is exponential is not a good guess. It's more likely is polynomial, but the problem is that experimentally, even polynomial is bad. That's the problem. Okay, good. Let's go on. So I would say that in the problem of quantum feedback, transformation depending on a transformation, no way you can repeat the transformation to make it more precise. The only thing you can do is to do it coherently. So you need really to do some joint stuff. Now, what is the best you can do? Let's start from the best you can do. Then we can do worse than the best. So the most general thing you can do, and actually this is true for every problem, for an experimentalist, for any complexity, whatever, the best thing you can do, and this was not considered in the past, in my opinion, that for what I know, but please, if you have references, give to me. You put your unknown unitary inside a big circuit. Let me say this is a board, like a motherboard of a computer, right? And what you want to do, you want to optimize the overall input-output transformation of this motherboard, where now, if you see, the variables are transformations, are not states. The input are transformations, and the output is a transformation. So we want to optimize a circuit board. So that's the formulation of the problem. But we want to optimize the circuit board over all possible dispositions of this unitary. They can come in a row, in parallel. There can be some circuit in between. And we want to do it for all possible dispositions. Then maybe some dispositions are less are more complex, and some other are easier. But we want to know what is the best we can do in principle first. And this looks pretty hard, right? But it's not so difficult, as you will see. Just to give an idea, for example, it's better to estimate the phase or a set of a unitary transformation, putting them in parallel over a joint entangled state, or to put them in a sequence intercalated by some other unitary, optimized, for example. And asymptotically, Giovannetti, Seth Lloyd, and Lorenzo Maccone showed that you get the same sensitivity in this end, in this case, for phase estimation, as a power law versus the number of copies, asymptotically for large number of copies. But there's something interesting. For discrimination, so you have only two unitaries and you want to discriminate between the two. In 2001, also in parallel with Assen and Janet Vidal, we found that this scheme is optimal for discrimination of unitary. But then
7 years later, I was very surprised, Duan, Feng, and Ying found that also this scheme is optimal. But it took 7 years to realize it. Eh? Sorry? Yeah, no, no, no. Actually, it's almost seven. If you look, if I remember, it's almost seven. No, no, I know that if you take 7 minus 1, you get 6. Anyway, 6, 7. Right. So, yeah.
Back to that slide, I still have my question.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have two questions. One is, what happens with noise in this? I mean, you keep copying the thing over and over and over, you entangle 500,000 states. Does it scale? Does it, And
okay.
The second question is, has anybody done this in the lab?
Okay, first,
I asked this here.
Let me repeat, maybe I was not sufficiently. So first, you want to know what is the best you can do, right?
I understand that.
And then you put the noise, and then you want to know what is the best you can do with noise.
Now, how do we know the noise is
the noise? You can put the noise over the optimal QBM. So once, for example, you get the optimal QBM. You get the optimal state. Now, instead of putting that state, because you are not able, but that's your limitation, because you are not a good experimentalist, you are not able. You are a theoretician, right? So you are not able to make that optimal state or that optimal QVM. What you do? You spoil that state, the optimal one, and the optimal QVM by a chance. There are many ways of taking into account the noise later, but now we are looking for the optimal in principle. The noise can be part of the, I'm saying, okay, I'm using, that's another issue. I'm using unitaries, but if you want to be general, all the theory is just for yours, because if I put a channel everywhere, after a while you get bored. I use unitary, everybody is more excited. But these are channels. These are channels. Actually, for the theory, these are generic channels.
So you have ancilla, Eric.
I have everything.
The thing will be the size of the perimeter.
This is a channel, this is a channel, this is a channel. Then it becomes very hard to do the theory, but this is a channel, this is a channel.
It gets hard to do the experiment.
I don't know. You are interested in experiment or theory? I am the theoretician.
No, but, so there is another approach is to actually include the faulty preparation and measurements and try to come up with algorithm based on available interaction for what you have in the lab and
sure.
Considering the noise and trying to optimize it from the beginning instead of doing. But this is another approach. These are two different paradigms. And yours is to find the optimal thing and trying to see in what cases it is realizable and adding noise and trying to.
Yes. It's the same. So for those who are familiar with the history of quantum homodyne tomography, if somebody of you, the beginning was just the beginning, there was God creating the homodyne. And in the homodyne tomography, there was just a perfect homodyning and the state. And there was the radon transform, and then there was the pattern function method, and blah, and blah. Then after that, we consider quantum efficiency. Then we consider other things. And we discover that we can make an inversion of the noise over the PVM. So we can do the same approach. So maybe if you want, we can develop the full theory of the noisy case. But that's another seminar. Or we can put this in one discussion. If the noisy case. So I'm addressing just the ideal, because we need to first, the history of physics teach us, first understand the ideal, then put additional stuff. You want to first understand what is the law, right? And then you want to put other problems. But you don't start with the general situation with everything there, So.
I guess the question is, it doesn't matter one way or another, I suppose, because you get a result that at least provides us with a guiding light. The question is,
right.
Will your optimization mathematical approach, is that actually going to be robust to the presence of noise and awful things? And how much of that have you already got in by putting in real? Those are all still quantum.
I understand. This is a serious thing. I think the robustness will depend. I'm saying it's like tomography, which I think is the case. It is a very robust.
very robust means that there is a set of measure zero which is unstable. So it's robust almost everywhere, but not always. So, but in the lab, you are not in the measure zero case, so it's robust, probably. But, you know, I didn't address the problem. But it should be something like tomography. So tomography is very robust, extremely robust.
Maybe the problem of noise is a more general issue rather than just saying, I generalize the things. Because, you know, it depends on your prior, whether you know that you have a pure state or you have mixtures. As soon as you have mixtures, your estimation procedures can be completely different. I mean, Emily knows very well, essentially, how difficult it is to go from estimation when you have
I have a prior. In the tomography case, I have prior, cross-function, everything. I have the noise. But now,
easy to add the noise if you really do not.
I use the noise all the time in tomography, so I know what is the problem. But here, we will see something new. You want to see the end of the story with the noise? I will tell you on Friday. Give me 4 days. I will put down the equation. It's not hard.
It's not always that easy to say that adding a noise.
What I can tell you is the same procedure that you have in tomography. What you have in tomography, you have, for example, a set of observables. You have noise. The observables become POVM. They are not the optimal one, and you can always put this noise over the state and make an inversion of the channel, which is not a channel anymore when you make the inversion. But you can do the inversion analytically to recover the state cleaned by the noise. This is a general methodology which can be applied also here. It's very robust. It's very robust. So the issue of noise is not, there may be thresholds. If the noise is too much, then you can spoil everything. This can be the case, right? But there is a systematic way to address the noise, which is the same way, which is already in the literature, for tomography. Anyway, this is an important issue, but maybe we can discuss after the ideal case.
For a long time, I'm interested in methodological issues. You just mentioned that. I have some references. I'm just curious. Because when you design an experiment and looking for all the methodological issues and all the sampling design and design experiments, you mentioned methodological issues. So I'm just curious, you have some references on?
What do you mean references?
Well, papers methodological issues. And
yeah, maybe I can give you more details later separately.
Papers or.
But we have not got the problem. Yeah, we are still at A, B, C. We know the declination of verbs, but we don't have a language to discuss the problem of noise. Please let me go a little bit off. I will give a 1/10 of the talk in this way. I'm sorry. If you think about this is a very strange situation that is not very common. Michele Mosca, in this joint paper, found an optimal way by his, Michele is not here right now, by his, he's a computer scientist, by his computer science method, an optimal disposition of black boxes in phase estimation, which is a cascade of a power of 2. And actually, we didn't know that this is a unique optimal. Maybe there are other. And what I want to tell you is that, I canceled some transparencies. Okay. Yeah. The problem is that he got this by a very specific method computer science method. So what we don't have is a general method to address what is the optimal disposition of the boxes. And this is our problem. Now, if you want to understand the spirit of this method, you have to think to a quantum channel like a mathematical description of an equivalence class of quantum circuits giving the same input-output transformation. So a channel describes not one circuit, but many, many possible circuits which give the same input-output. And the input are states, and the output are states. Now you consider
the equivalence class of all possible quantum Bohr achieving the same input-output transformation for given slotted transformation. Here, the inputs and the output are transformations. Clear? So the real issue now is to optimize this board. We have inputs, outputs locally for the slots. By the way, let me say that these inputs, outputs are different quantum systems. They can have different dimension. They can be classical wires. In this problem, you can immediately see that actually you can put these multiple uses in this way, always. Every disposition can be written as a sequence of unitaries, of a sort of unknown phase shifts, intercalated by some unitaries with sufficiently many ancillas. Here the complexity comes. How many ancilla you have? And this is, I can tell you immediately, is polynomial. Actually, linear. Anyway, it's polynomial. It's not exponential. This is complex. You see that this is always true because the situation in which this use and this use are in parallel, for example, can be achieved very easily by a swap, a unitary swap here. If you swap the two wires, these two will be in parallel. So in this way, constructively, you can get every disposition of your black boxes by intercalating suitable unitary with suitable ancillas. And you can immediately see that the structure of a comb emerges here, in which each unknown unitary stays between two teeth of the comb. Actually, if you think about every board, circuit board, by stretching and reshuffling the wires, which is just an identity transformation, is always equivalent to a comb. You can always put this unknown transformation in a sequence in which what matters is that the input of this transformation can get the output from this, but not vice versa. So there is a causal ordering, which is a one-dimensional ordering. And this is the most general thing you can do. No, no, it's not unique because they can be in parallel, but this is the most general. You don't need to go to dimension n. It's whichever is your network of unitary is always dimension one. Because this is the causality, the time in quantum mechanics. Okay, everything is unitary just because unitary is more sexy, but we can. But this is actually, everything actually can be a channel here, and the problem becomes more difficult. Discrimination.
So this, in the case of unitary, it's not that the time ordering, it shouldn't matter much, you know, because it's reversible. Irreversibility comes when.
No. Irreversibility is, no. What matters is that the input of this channel can get stuff from the output of this channel, but not vice versa. Huh? Okay.
Parallel processing of two red boxes.
For example, shift this one here and put it here. And then there are two equivalent orderings here. 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1, 2, 3, 4. Clear?
I'm sorry, one more time. I haven't had enough caffeine, I guess. You're saying that in the circuit on the right, are you saying it's not that you can't invert the input-output process?
Some of these two, for example, you can, but not these two. So you are not allowed to exchange the two.
Okay.
As a rule. In some cases, maybe you can.
Okay.
So it's a partial ordering. It's like greater than or equal to, right?
Sorry, but can you give me a hint, like, how the scheme on the left can be converted into the scheme
on
the right?
I move this here, I move this here, I just stretch the wires, then I move this up, and the wires will be integral, but who cares? They are just wires. And that's all. No. This gets input from this and this.
Right,
and so these are before this one.
Yeah, but that's not what you have in the comp.
No, 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 no. You just have many ancilla. Here there are many wires. Here there are wires. Lot of wires here.
And the wires can go back.
No, the wires can never, that's the point. The wires can never come back. This is quantum circuits. Eh? Wires cannot make loops.
This is not identity transformation. It's just locally it's not identity.
Exactly.
Locally it's not. Because you have to make changes in the
making wires long in quantum circuits, making wires long or short is identity. Otherwise, you put a unitary transformation. I'm talking about quantum circuits, is identity. In quantum circuits, the wire is an identity. It is irrelevant if it is long or short. These are wires in the computational sense, in quantum circuits.
Am I correct in saying that the only statement you're making here is that it is possible to implement these gates one at a time in some chronological order?
Yeah, right. by adding ancillas. There are ancillas. Here, there is some big stuff. Here, there is some big stuff. Here, there are some big stuff, which are this big unitary I showed you before. And here, there are many ancillas. That's always possible.
Yeah.
So this is the causal ordering. That's true for every possible circuit. So now, the general structure is that of a quantum comb, in which you have these input and outputs that can be different, as I told you, different quantum systems with different dimensions. They can be classical wires, they can be quantum wires. But we are just at the very beginning. The problem is how we want to describe, how we can to describe these quantum comps mathematically. And this is the interesting part. I think that 90% of you, because you are at a conference of Tomography of channels, essentially, because this is the not states, but process tomography is in the background of everybody. You should be familiar with the Choi-Jabotinsky isomorphism, which is what? Is that it is very convenient to describe quantum channels instead by the usual completely conservative CP map. If it's an operation, is trace non-increasing, if it's a channel, it's trace preserving. By instead of using the CP map, you use the output state for a maximally entangled input state. With the CP map, with the channel acting only locally on one system. This is a one-to-one correspondence between the output state and the channel, and it's called Choi-Jabotinsky isomorphism. It's just a way to represent the channel as a positive operator instead of using a completely positive map, because we are more familiar with operators than map. That's all. Now, think this circuit as made of rubber. Also, the wires are rubbery. You bend the circuit, you bend the comb. You bend it in such a way to put all inputs which are labeled by even numbers on the left and all outputs which are labeled by odd numbers on the right. You can always do that. You have to, I'm saying, try to bend it in your mind. You are just bending the wires. You are not changing the causality. And now you have a channel. So the quantum comb is just a channel. But it's not any channel. It's a channel which has a structure, which is this causality structure. And actually, if you think about, you can regard in a different way the inputs here and the outputs here. This is just a stack of memory channel. So the quantum comp is what in literature is well known as a memory channel. So we already know this stuff.
Inside you have something which is a particular causality flow, if you will, right?
No, but you see the causality sphere?
Oh. No, but wait a minute. In your comb, channel one feeds into channel two.
Yeah.
On the right-hand side, channel one.
No. It's respected here. You see that there are these connections are not any connection. You have to think. This is exactly the same causality structure. Exactly. It's only that it's represented in a different way. So two Right. 3 can get from 2. You see? No, no. 3 can get from 2 and can get from 0. 3 can get from 0 and can get from 2, but cannot get from 4.
Yeah,
you see, it right. is the same thing. I know it took, you know, as you have to think about. We discovered these things. When we discovered, we went, how can it be? It's a trivial thing. But for you, it's the first time you see it.
So let me ask a sort of a naive question that I think I know the answer to, but I think it's confusing. On the left, 1 represents a system that gets fed immediately into another channel, whereas on the right,
right.
1 just goes flying off to be used, right?
Good.
That's confusing.
If you want to put the box here, which is very convenient in the COM frame, in the COM representation, the box would be connected from here to here. It would be a very bad representation of this one, because regarding this box, the connection is still causal, because you enter from here, you go to here, and then you go to here, and so on. It's still causal. But in this case, if you use this representation, you have a wire going in the reverse direction, which is bad.
To see if I understand this right, I could take that circuit, or the one on the right, and instead of having it loop around like this, I could have the 1 bend down immediately as soon as it comes out of the first yellow box and go over the sort of 0 wire and connect to the 2 wire. Is that
Yeah. So it is connected like this. Bam, bam.
Yeah, so sort of break.
Yeah. And it takes a little bit of time to realize everything is trivial.
Sorry. Again, on his last question, you can equally as well take that 1 wire rather than bending it down and just add it into the stuff that's coming out horizontal with the 0 wire.
Oh, yeah, but then you are violating. That's why we need the comb, in order not to violate that causality. So here you can violate the causality by making connection like from here to here. So, but if you want to keep the causality constraint here, yeah. regarding the variables, because you know you can connect whatever you want here, but if you want to connect just 1 channel here, 1 channel here, 1 channel here, the rule is that you can do only this way: bang, 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 bang. So this is a representation which is only for mathematical convenience, to have all inputs on one side and all outputs on one side. But the causal precise representation is this one. So it's equivalent to a memory channel, but please use the memory channel appropriately. Otherwise, it's not equivalent.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, we are going to use this. Yeah, I am a 1/5 of the talk. Okay. Because we already had questions, maybe we can use that. Okay, so now that you can represent the comb as a channel structure, causally structured, then it's very easy to write the Choi-Jamolkowski, because you just get a maximally entangled state between all inputs and some dimensional ancilla with sufficient dimension. The causality constraint, which gives the specific structure of this channel, are given by these partial traces of the Choi-Jamolkowski operator of this channel. So you have nested partial traces written in this way. So it's a linear constraint. It is going to be a big help in solving the problem. Now, if you think about, you can regard the comb mathematically as a map which goes from n channels, so is an n linear completely positive map, to a single channel. But you can regard, okay, you can always consider also the probabilistic case in which is not a channel, is a quantum operation. So I just to make everything easy, I always use unitary, I always use channels, but actually, the most general situation is quantum operation. But if I say quantum operation all the time, you get bored, you sleep. It's only because I know that it's not sexy. Now, you can consider the comb also as a map from a set of channels to another comb.
But more generally, you can consider the channel, the comb, as a map from a comb to a comb. So if you think to the comb as a super map, because it sends maps to maps, so it's a higher level of maps, Now, what you discover is that this is the last level of generalization. This is like the Lucien Hardy causaloid. Yeah, it's very, it's the last level of generalization, because you cannot have super, if you think to a super, super map, which sends a super map to a super map, it's still a comb, because the comb sends also combs to combs. So it's everything. So this is the most general structure. There is not more generalization. Okay, now we need an additional, this is the only thing we need in the, just to start the language. We need the mathematical description of connectivity between circuits. So it's very important for us because we want to keep causality and all these things. What is the problem? The problem is to have the Choi-Jamolkowski operator of two circuits connected in some way, starting from the Choi-Jamolkowski operators of the component circuits. We have a simple rule for a simple notation, and notation is always very important if you want to do calculations. You label all wires with different letters apart from those wires which are identified because they are connected. Then you introduce the Choi operator of the circuits A and circuit B of these two channels. Let me denote by J the Hilbert space of the common wires, can be more than one wire, can be three wires, whatever. Hilbert space of the common wires. Then I extend each circuit Choi operator to the wires of the other circuits. So these are the wires. So this is the Choi operator of this. I extend to wires E, F, G. This is the Choi operator of circuit B. I extend to the other wires of circuit A. I multiply in this tensor way the two operators, put the partial transposition over the common wires, and take the partial trace over the common wires. And this is what we call link product, the Choi operator of the circuit, which is commutative. I know now we are going to make a big mess. You say, if you exchange the circuits, how can it be commutative? If you exchange the circuits, you are relabeling completely the wires. So they're going to be different operator on different spaces. The Choi operator will be on different spaces. The common wire will not be D, but we will be, for example, F or G. Right? So the commutativity has nothing to do with the, because when you can connect these two circuits in many different ways, right? Not just two. So you describe in this way in a very easy notation. I strongly suggest to use this notation because you cannot believe. You don't use this notation, the notation explodes exponentially. You can describe any connection between quantum circuits, and you can even describe the application of a channel to a state as a connection of circuits, which is this link product between the Choi of the channel and the Choi, which is the state itself. The state is a channel from dimension one to dimension D. And here, even the Born rule, is a link product between the POVM, there is just a star, there's a conjugation, there is, and the state. So it's a very general product, which I strongly recommend. Now, here comes the full machinery. Take a quantum comb, fix all inputs and all outputs, because you are going to optimize for given inputs and outputs. So for example, this output is dimension two, this output is dimension four, this is a qubit, this is a Q3, this is a classical output, this is a quantum output. Fix the structure and consider all possible combs with the same structure they are, a convex set. Right? Because you can randomly choose between them, respecting causality. Now, if you take the causality constraints, the causality constraints are a linear equation, so they are just an hyperplane section of your convex set. And the section is still a convex set. In most of the applications, like for example, estimation of unitary, estimation of states, uniformly over all possible pure states, in most, 99% of the application, you have a covariance. Covariance means, for example, for a measurement, that if you rotate the state, the output of the measurement will be rotated likewise. Or you have a covariance of a transformation, you transform the input of your circuit board, the output will be transformed the same way. This is extremely important because you always have a symmetrical situation in which you don't care if it's this operator or if it's that operator. You want to treat all of them in the same way. But also the covariance constraint is linear. So everything is linear. So this is another hyperplane section. At the end, you have a convex set. So you are able now to optimize over all possible equivalence classes of circuits, giving over all possible disposition by just a convex problem. I think it's nice. Okay, wait a minute. Okay. You may have two situations, typically. The most typical situation to us is to minimize a concave function over this convex space. So then what you want to do, you want to find the extremal points, and then you find the optimal one. I can tell you that we can solve a problem of this kind for any number of qubits. Are you happy? Not of qubits, qubits, n variable. So we can find these extremal points. Yeah, this is a pretty difficult problem. Yeah, sure.
General problem of finding optimal measurements. And you showed how to, and these measurements are for estimating channels. So we transformed an arbitrary circuit board to a comb, and the comb has a causality structure. But now what I'm missing is the second statement here. Causality constraints correspond to hyperplane. Okay, so what are the causality constraints if I simply start with trying to do some estimation problem? Where do I get the causality constraints?
Okay, the estimation problem, give me another two transparencies so at least I get the starting point, which is the estimation situation, which is a specific case in which the output is a classical output, is a what we call a quantum tester. The tester is the comb in which the output is a statistical output. This is transparency. So the most general situation, you have an input, which is another comb. A comb can be also a set of channels, everything, right? And then you are testing this with a comb, in which the output is just a classical outcome. We call this tester. I don't know. You like the name? My student loves this name. What is interesting now is that the probability distribution of this outcome can be written, you would love that, in form of a new kind of Born rule, in which the role of the state is played by the Choi-Jabotinsky operator of this test stuff. And the role of the POVM is played by what we call the tester, which is just a POVM, but the normalization is not the identity, but is this causality constraint positive operator. So the sandwich structure I was giving at the beginning, which is a very, very specific case in which you have only one box, is described by what? By a generalization of the POVM, in which the only thing that you miss is the normalization, which instead of being the identity, is a positive operator satisfied this causality constraint. By the way, a similar structure has been discovered by Zeeman. We call process complete. In fact, this is the second part of my talk. So, for example, we want to solve the problem of optimal estimation of unitaries for all possible disposition of unitaries. You probably are very interested in this situation because you did a lot of very interesting work in this direction. What is the most general framework to optimize this is to find the optimal tester for n copies of the unitary. So it will be to solve this convex problem in this case. And I can tell you that for qubits, we can do it. I want to, for an experimentalist or people that are really interested in practice, to tell you that actually, when I say that you have many uses, you are not obliged to think that you really have n boxes at the same time. You can have just one box and use it many times as long as you have a quantum memory. If you have a quantum memory, then you can cut here with a scissor your quantum comb, take the wires from the comb, feed the quantum memory, and then tomorrow put this quantum memory to feed as the input the second part of the comb. So in this way, you can use the same unitary many times at different times. You don't need actually to, when you say you perform a joint measurement, it's not really a joint measurement. But it is a joint measurement in the sense that it can be done in different times, but if you have a quantum memory, that's obvious. Applications. Now there is the big chapter of tomography, but I think we need to, there is no time. Maybe we decide what to do. So what I can say you is that for discrimination, this the parallel strategy is already optimal. We were lucky, just lucky as in the phase case, the phase estimation case. But for optimal discrimination of channels, and generally for optimal estimation of unitary, the problem is still open. And for sure, it's not the parallel case. We know that it's not, but we don't have already the proof. What I can tell you is that if you have a structured channel, like for example, a memory channel, you want to discriminate between two memory channels, you can do it one shot by a tester, but you cannot do by treating them just as channels. So exploiting the causal structure in the discrimination is crucial to be efficient. And now we go to the optimal tomography stuff. I think that if you are interested, I have the full derivation, which is very interesting because you can see the prior, the cost function, all these things at work. So by a comb, what is the optimization? You want a tester, which is just that one, this one. And you want to optimize this. Then the optimization will depend on what you want to do, Bayesian scheme, minimax, and what is the cost function. And that's a very general problem. Here you have also the opportunity of doing tomography with multiple uses, three times, or even to make tomography of a board. You know, now you can, I give you a motherboard, I am at IBM, give you the motherboard, and I can make the tomography of the full board, like in Star Trek. You know, you know everything what's going on. You don't know what is the physical structure because there are many quantum circuits giving the same transformation. But you get the full transformation of the motherboard. What I can tell you in a minute, then you stop me, please, because I have another 30 transparencies on tomography, because tomography was not touched at all. So there were too many questions, but I love questions. Is the following. We made optimization of tomography using different input-output dimensions. And this is a very good technique to make in one shot tomography of states, tomography of channels, and tomography of PoVMs, because a state is just a channel from dimension 1 to dimension D, and the PoVM element is just a channel from dimension D to dimension 1. So once you have general dimension, you do all these cases in one shot. We consider a prior distribution of
channels, which can be a prior distribution of states, which can be a prior distribution of QVM. And we consider, for simplicity, a case which is actually in practice most, the most interesting, which corresponds to a depolarizing channel as an average channel. This is the most practical case also, not just the easiest. Cost function, if you see the calculation, the cost function is equivalent to another kind of prior, is a prior of observables, and it corresponds to say I want more error for this observable than for that observable, less error, and so on. And this will give, actually, if you consider equally weighted or orthonormal operators, it will give the usual representation of channels with matrix elements as a specific case. But you will optimize in one shot all possible matrix representations. And then we have the possibility by a projection technique, which is very simple, to select from the general case of quantum operation, specifically, if you know that is a channel, to select channels, or if you know that is a unital channel, namely preserving the maximally chaotic state, the identity, then you can project over unital channels, or you can project more and make your prior knowledge helping in the efficiency of the method. So now I skip all transparencies about tomography, but I think that maybe you want to consider, you will see in this the full machinery at work for tomography. And there are also other issues, like for example, there is this prior, you can make this, the method self-consistent by using your data to improve the prior and have a Bayesian scheme in tomography, or you can use a frequentistic way by improving the POVM. The secret of this method, this would need a long lecture, is the following. The general method is the following. You have a POVM. A POVM can be used, you can expand some operators on this POVM. All operators you can expand on this POVM can be estimated by measuring that POVM. If they are all possible operators, the POVM is informationally complete. This includes, for example, the quorum of observables. No? And the most interesting case is when the POVM is an overcomplete basis, because then the coefficients of the expansion are not unique. And you can optimize these coefficients. And there is a theory which gives the best expansion, minimizing, for example, the variance, which is the most interesting situation, the statistical efficiency, which is very neat, very nice. And it is actually, we have a PRL, maybe we can discuss that, on optimal data processing of quantum measurements. So there is the problem of optimizing the setup, and there is the problem of optimizing the data processing. This second problem is easier. But if you use expansion over an over complete basis of operator, everything resorts to find the optimal coefficients of the expansion that are not unique. Anyway, there is so much stuff to tell. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you.